This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And a good evening to you for, February 1st, 2012. My name is Doug Kelly. So good to have you. And I'm, of course, here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
I'm here to be enlightened. Good evening, everybody.
Yes, we're going to talk about enlightenment tonight, whatever that is, but we'll figure it out by the end of the hour. We are, of course, Metaphysical Universe, exploring science, spirituality, empowering the human spirit. This program is an educational part of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, and you can visit us online at mchschurch.org, and, of course, the Metaphysics Institute at metaphysicsinstitute.org. We'd like to welcome everybody who are joining us live tonight in the chat room, as well as those who are listening to the archive. Of course, live tonight, we've got people from around the world. We have people from South Africa, Canada, India, and, of course, the U.S., and we'll see who else joins us tonight. So
hopefully we'll have the Philippines join us tonight.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Or Jericho, that would be great, too.
We are a worldwide program.
We are, too. We are.
And so if you'd like to be a part of the program tonight, we'd love to hear your questions either in the chat room or you can call in. The numbers are on your screen, 714-459-3973. And I think you can use Skype, too, with a button there if you have Skype. And so we'd love to hear from you if you want to call. Of course, the man behind the curtain tonight, as always, Reverend John Hightower, will be screening your calls. So tonight the topic is on the challenges of enlightenment, and the concept is that there are many philosophies that discuss enlightenment. We'll mention a few here in a minute. But what does it really mean to be enlightened? How exactly do you become enlightened? You know, do you always remain enlightened? These are the kind of questions we're going to discuss. We're going to enlighten you, on enlightenment and self-completeness and self-actualization and those things.
It's kind of like hoping for hope. We're going to enlighten for enlightenment. You know, it's kind of a double thing there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, I always find it very interesting when people are seeking enlightenment. We hear it all the time, don't we? The people are seeking to be enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
But what does it mean, Doug?
Well, we hear the expression, yes, enlighten me, why don't you? Enlighten me as to what enlightenment means. Let's talk, kind of go back a little bit, go back to about the, I don't know, the late 1700s, early 1800s, or actually it's the 17th, 18th centuries, I should say, so it'd be 100 years later. But this is when what is called the Age of Enlightenment or the Age of Reason was kind of born. That's a Western movement that started that advocated science as a better option for human advancement than religious tyranny, which had been around for centuries. And there were many well-known people, men of note, who published essays and books and writings, and these essays and books and writings criticized and dispelled many of the religious superstitions, myths of that time, and of course, that's equally applicable in our own time too. Many of these people included Sir Isaac Newton, Francis Bacon, Rene Descartes, John Locke, Benjamin Franklin, David Hume, Immanuel Kant, Captain James Cook, Thomas Jefferson, Goethe, Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine, of course, perhaps you've heard of him. One of my favorites, he wrote the book The Age of Reason, much to the Church of England chagrin, because his book The Age of Reason remains one of the most persuasive critiques of the Bible ever written. It's an excellent, excellent book. You can get that online if you just do a search, The Age of Reason, Thomas Paine. But that was the Age of Reason or the Age of Enlightenment. But I would like to talk about another age of enlightenment that we are currently in. In fact, I call this the Great Age of Enlightenment. And it's very simple. It's the enlightenment that is a result of what I think is probably the greatest human invention ever, and that's the Internet. I've mentioned this before. this great age of enlightenment that we're currently in has brought all of us together tonight. It's that's what it's responsible for. It, you know, people of like minds can get together. We can sharpen each other, and it's just an incredible time to be alive, because so much is happening. This is, I mean, these are exciting times, I'm telling you.
Well, isn't it fair to say, though, even with this age of enlightenment, we could also say it's kind of an age of technology that can distract people from the old philosophical idea of the age of enlightenment. Or, so it kind of, you know, it brings us together. So it can be kind of, I think, confusing in that it's a catch-22.
Well, it can also lead to it. I mean, that's obviously our purpose with this radio program, with the Metaphysical Church, with the Metaphysics Institute, is to aid people in becoming more enlightened, you know, more aware, more self-aware, more aware of the world and our surroundings and others' plights, and the list goes on and on. So let me give you some, that is our audience, some of the common definitions of enlightenment. I've got, I don't know, several here. I'm just going to kind of paraphrase some of them. One from Wikipedia: enlightenment in a secular context often means the full comprehension of a situation, but in spiritual terms, the word alludes to a spiritual revelation or deep insight into the meaning and purpose of all things, communication with or understanding of the mind of God, profound spiritual understanding, or a fundamentally changed consciousness whereby everything is perceived as a unity. That's from Wikipedia. And Buddhism, its enlightenment is the awakening to ultimate truth by which man is freed from the endless cycle of personal reincarnations to which all men are otherwise subject.
I can't wait for that one.
Yeah. I'll let you know.
Kidding.
Dalai Lama, true enlightenment is nothing but the nature of one's own self being fully realized. Good one. Hinduism, enlightenment is a state of transcendent divine experience represented by Vishnu, regarded as a goal of all religion. Here's one by Kant, Immanuel Kant. Enlightenment is man's emergence from his self-imposed immaturity. Immaturity is the inability to use one's understanding without guidance from another. In other words, self-completeness. This immaturity is self-imposed when its cause lies not in a lack of understanding, but in lack of resolve and courage to use it without guidance from another. I like that because it really underscores being complete within yourself. Wayne Dyer, you probably heard of him. He says, if I could define enlightenment briefly, I would say it is the quiet acceptance of what is. Now we get into a couple that are going to promote a little bit more of discussion. Let's see, this Adya Shanti, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. He says that enlightenment is not perceiving through the distortion of ego. Eckhart Tolle, an egoless state. That's how he defines enlightenment. some fella, I'm not familiar with him, but his name's Ugg Krishnamurti. Maybe some of you know. He says there is no such thing as enlightenment. And finally, the last one I'll share is from a fellow. He was actually, this is the late Peter Gay. He was a Yale professor of history. He wrote, the philosophy of the Enlightenment insisted on man's essential autonomy. Man is responsible to himself, to his own rational interests, to his self-development, and by an inescapable extension to the welfare of his fellow man. So he was applying it to oneself and to doing right for others. So a lot of definitions are around as to what enlightenment actually means. I personally appreciate these ones that talk about autonomy, responsibility, self-development, service to others, accepting what is, you know, in a healthy way.
You know, what I'm hearing, though, is if we tie all of those together, if they're all threaded together, they're all real. They're all right. You know, there's something essentially the same about them, just perhaps a different angle. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they can all apply depending on where you're at in the moment. So it's like, geez, this morning I could read one and that makes sense, and I could read one later, you know, and that would make sense. Because I think there's truth to all of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's obviously truth to all of them for the people who relate to them. There's some I can't relate to. You know, as I've mentioned in previous programs, I'm still on the fence regarding reincarnation, so I can't really relate to that one. And plus, with Hinduism or Buddhism, whichever one it is, you know, it's like you're a drop in the bucket of the ocean. And, yeah, you're an individual here, but when you go back, you just kind of go back into the mass consciousness. And, you know, I just can't deal with that because it goes along with, like, Eckhart Tolle and some others where you have to get rid of the ego. And I have taught and will continue to teach that that is absurd. The ego means I. It means who you are. Of course, there's different definitions of that. Freud talked about the ego as being, well, kind of stuck in the middle between the id, or the base instincts, and the superego, which is where your consciousness and your morality is. And the ego kind of does a tug of war between those two. You know, the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other, that kind of a thing. And I absolutely will not accept that the ego is so much a bad thing. Now, of course, can an ego be a bad thing? Of course it can. We know people who are egotistical. Yeah, they have too much of it. They think too much of themselves. What I'm talking about with an ego, and I'm really talking about a healthy ego, a healthy self-concept, and that ego is part of what makes you and I who we are. It's part of us. And I cannot teach that you got to get rid of that just to experience whatever else there is. Because to a very real degree, for all of us, our perception is our reality. Our beliefs are our reality. We are part of that. We need to explore that with a healthy ego, not thinking too much of ourselves, but also not thinking too less of ourselves. And the other part about repressing the ego or trying to diminish it or get rid of it altogether to become enlightened is part of the problem. It has served religion so well to devalue and denigrate the human being, and I do not do that. I empower people. I don't denigrate them. So I don't go along with you have to get rid of the ego in order to be enlightened. So if not, what does enlightenment mean? You know, what are some of the ways that one becomes enlightened?
I think this is a really good discussion about ego, because most people I've spoken with worry that to be self-possessed, self-certain, self-confident, and, you know, that autonomy is the ego. And I think what I hear is that people are worried that, and look, I'm the first one to say, people may appear or may think that I appear to have a big ego when I suppose, depending on the view I do. But as we have talked in previous shows and in conversations, self-certainty and self-possessed is not necessarily ego in the way people might hear it to be.
It's not egotistical. No, you're not egotistical. You're not narcissistic. There are people out there who are. What you're talking about, being self-complete, being self-possessed, those are good things. You know, it's not a bad thing. And I agree. Some people would say, well, Doug, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. Your ego's getting in the way here, and it's preventing you from becoming enlightened. If you would just lose your ego, you'd know what these other, you know, sages are talking about. And I'm sorry. No. You know, I don't think too much of myself. I don't think too little of myself. I am who I am. I'm proud of who I am. I try every day to be better than I was yesterday. I try to learn, and I do learn. I learn from everybody. But, you know, am I it? No, I'm part of it. I'm an equal part of it, just as you are who are listening. You're an equal part of it, it meaning the universe, all that is. We need you. We need me. We need all of us to make up this thing, because we're all part of it. And that's a good thing, and it's something to be embraced and caressed, you know, and cherished.
Well, I think when people are searching for ego. I've been guilty of this when I was very young, too. In the search for enlightenment, the search to be better, it gets very cerebral. You know, it thinks too much.
Well,
and
I'd never think too much. I'm sorry. Wrong about that.
Well, and I've been guilty of it, too. But there's, I think that enlightenment has to encompass all parts of ourselves. The emotional stability. I like that one earlier about maturity. You know, that emotional stability and, again, the mental balance, physical balance, and a spiritual sense of oneself. And I think when these things line up, then we don't even think about ego.
Exactly.
You know, there is no worry about it.
Exactly right. And so when we talk about the enlightenment, and we'll talk about enlightenment, and we'll talk about transcending. Well, we're talking about the ego. Let's talk about transcending the ego again. Transcendence generally means going beyond or climbing above. And again, it's a term heavily steeped in religious spirituality, and it usually denotes rising beyond the death of the physical body. This word transcendence implies achieving enlightenment, but usually only after death. And some of the religions believe that you know, you're not going to become enlightened until you actually die, which is too late, if you ask me.
Well, this is where I've taken issue, Doug, because people believe, and this, I have taken issue with people about this, that the notion of somebody who is enlightened or transcendent means to say they're very peaceful, calm, you know, and they go with the flow, and you know, it's boring, really. It puts me to sleep. And I think that people are passionate and exciting and vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if people are working to be enlightened or to transcend this sense of spirituality, that they're working towards something that they're not. And I think that's the biggest fear, is when you're working toward or think that you're evolving towards something outside yourself, there's the risk that you lose yourself. And I think that we lose our identity. I have tried to become that very peaceful, calm, quiet, you know, kind of go with the flow kind of girl. I just got an ulcer.
But that doesn't necessarily denote enlightenment, you know.
And
that's what we have to define here. In fact, Manisha makes a great comment. Enlightenment is a continuous process. Absolutely correct.
Good point.
About learning and assimilating knowledge. One needs to upgrade him or herself to a higher level of consciousness. And that is really what it's all about. It's not like you get to the end of the road. Yep, okay, now I'm enlightened. You know, it's not like enlightenment is a destination. It's part of the journey. You can have varying levels of it. And when we talk about enlightenment, we're talking about awareness, self-awareness, awareness of the world, awareness of others' plights, awareness of the environment. You know,
so that consciousness is a good word. That's a good word to explore.
Well, it is. It's all part of your expanding consciousness. And when you think about enlightenment and expanding consciousness, there are other aspects of enlightenment that would be consistent with an enlightened person. Self-control, knowing who you are and why you are who you are, being complete within yourself. That means not, quote, needing, unquote, somebody else to make you complete. You know, being complete within yourself, knowing how to, or rather handling situations because you owe it to yourself. It goes right into things that can happen and that do happen all the time. A lot of it on the internet, too. You get in forums, people are hiding behind a screen, hiding behind anonymity. They act out, they use foul language, they're mean to people, they do harm. You know, why? They wouldn't say that if they were face to face with these people, but what they're doing is showing their true colors. And as I've said repeatedly, you know, and I don't know who originally made this quote, I have to find it. I haven't found it yet, but basically, you know, nobody is more worthy of your best behavior than you. You know, a case in point, I get emails from time to time, you know, most of them are really good, no big deal. Every now and then I'll get a somebody complaining, doesn't know how to communicate, hasn't grown up, you know, has a problem, and basically starts out accusing, and, you know, I'm this, I'm that, I'm everything in the book. You know, and none of it's true, of course. And And it would be so cool to write them back and say, you know what, Bonehead, every single thing you said was wrong is not wrong. It's in perfect working order. The reason you're having a problem is because you're a moron. Would it? Okay, I'm not going to do that.
But they're enlightened. They're enlightened morons.
So, you know, a lot of times we think, I'd just like to chew them out and give them a piece of my mind. But, you know.
That's being human. It's being human. And I think this is what we overlook when we're on some kind of path that is to explore life outside of ourselves. You know, but we're human. We're human. We forget that we're human. And I think anger is a perfectly natural experience, like ego, frustration, sadness. You know, there's these notions that, again, to be enlightened or conscious means that we don't have feelings. I think maybe the importance of old feelings, has changed. Because what was important to me or what I was emotional about 10 years ago, certainly not today, but that is that evolution that Manisha was mentioning earlier. We are continually growing people. But here's the difference, though. Even if we do become frustrated or angry, it's not for as long. And that we're in charge of it versus it in charge of us. And that, to me, is enlightenment, when we are our own managers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Knowing who we are.
Captain of our ship. Now, and you know, it's not so much that I get all that frustrated. The only thing that saves me these days is that to say I'm just here to study the species. That's my out. You know, I mean, that's what I'm here for. So I observe it, I understand it, and then I reply, taking the high road, and that's the point. You know, because. Yeah, I may want to tell them off. Yeah, maybe I want to say a few things, but you know that would then violate my principles of do no harm, do right, and also it would violate the biggest one of all. It would be unfair to me. It's unworthy of me, and so that's part of enlightenment is treating yourself like you should be treated. You are worthy of your best treatment, regardless of the situation. That's part of enlightenment. Now, that's kind of what enlightenment looks like.
What does it feel like?
Go for it.
It feels.
Tell us what it feels like.
Smarty. Look, I think that it's about feeling good about who you are. And I think when you grow from the inside, and you feel good about that. We don't always like our choices. We don't always feel good about having to make big decisions. Some things are very uncomfortable. It's good that it's uncomfortable because it brings you back to yourself and working toward that evolutionary process of feeling intact. And that's where I always know that life can't beat me up. You know, it can't. Because I am the master of my own self, and I feel good about that. And to know I have that kind of power over me, you know, it's like sometimes people, and I have been accused of this, of being rather controlling. I am controlling over me. See, and I'm not controlling anybody else. This is the planet of free will. I'm controlling me. This is my free will. And I think this is where enlightenment is all about feeling good about yourself and how we interact as a species, that we evolve together. And I think when we talk about the age of enlightenment, we are going beyond what we think of just in that intellectual, linear, or, you know, slicing out a piece of the pie that's emotional and I want, I can have. And, it's over there, I'm going to go study that book, and I'm going to go to this class, and I'm going to... These are all great venues to study the self. Mm-hmm. How do I feel? So it's how I feel about myself. And I think no one should be more interesting to me than me.
Hear, hear.
How is that possible? How can anyone possibly be more interesting to me than me? Now, that appears egotistical. It appears overconfident. It appears as though I might be really self-absorbed. I'm the only one that lives in this mind. Like, how did I think about that? How did I come up with that? How do I see that? How do I feel about that? Ooh, I could change my response to that. Or how can I be more proactive in that? See, that is interesting when we self-observe. And again, we are enlightening. And it's we're expanding consciousness when we do that. Everything outside the self triggers something to be learned inside the self. Mm-hmm. But the ultimate answer isn't over there. It's in here because I'm the only one seeing it.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, you know, and this is a good question to throw out to the audience. Who's the most interesting person you know? You know, and I'm going to propose like you, Vicki, that the most interesting person you know, well, I would hope it's you. I mean, think about what you've accomplished in your life, what you're setting out to accomplish, you know.
Isn't that ultimate enlightenment, though?
Well, it's part of it. I mean, there's a lot of aspects to it. And case in point, Jason in the chat room makes a comment, when you are enlightened, you are morally and ethically responsible for yourself, but you are more aware of that, more so than when you are not enlightened. And I agree with that. And I'd like to kind of draw a distinction here. We think about a wild animal, wildlife. Think about a bear, a cougar.
Could be an ex-husband.
Well, actually, that's where I'm headed. Okay, not to that specifically, but to examples like that. But we think about wild animals out in the wild. You know, we live on a planet where everything eats everything else. And so you have these wild animals, even domesticated animals. To what degree do they have enlightenment? Well, I don't think any of us would probably consider them to be enlightened beings. You know, they're driven largely on instinct. I'm not going to get into the whole discussion about what level of consciousness they have. They certainly do have some. But are they enlightened? Well, now look at people. Look at people who we would not consider to be enlightened. Think about terrorists. Think about sociopaths, serial killers, people who do harm to others, who treat others abusively, who, you know, the people who call up because they have a problem and yell at the person on the other line, you know, making it personal. These behaviors that are not consistent with enlightenment. We all know people like that. Well, what about others, though, that handle things magnanimously, who handle things with self-control, with self-possession? We can see a distinction. I mean, have you ever been in a grocery store and, you know, some mother with her kids or something, the kids are acting out and she's screaming at them and you're thinking, wow, you know, do you have problems or what? I mean, this is a symptom of a much bigger problem. I mean, I one time was out, this is several years ago, outside the video rental place back when, you know, that was a big thing. And there was, we were parked several cars away. There's this woman just screaming and verbally abusive to her children who were like, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years old. Just yelling and abusive and horrible. And I mean, that's not exactly somebody I would consider enlightened. In fact, far from it. They exhibit more animalistic behaviors than they do in even human behaviors.
You know, it's very interesting because I think people like that, to their friends, are normally very together, sweet, wonderful people. So this, to me, then shows an inconsistency, which to me is all part of enlightenment in self, you know, and in studying the self, is how, you know, we talked about this last week. Who are you when nobody's around? How do you act when nobody's around?
Yeah.
And it's about that consistency. Who are we consistently? You know, am I intact? We go back to that thing. You know, and this is what you have just described. I've seen it many times also. So how do we deal with that kind of a situation when we're there? How do we think of it when we see it when somebody else? You know, and it's all very different. It's like people might have, and again, when I was young, I was guilty of this too, to have, you know, very different opinions suited to the mood or situation or the emotion, where there has to be a certain amount of thought, introspection, and consistency. Because you can't be enlightened one way, but not another way. You know, I mean, you can be, but it's not necessarily the healthiest, you know, evolution towards some kind of consciousness. We want to take all our parts with us. That's not the easiest thing to do. As a matter of fact, it's a very difficult thing to do when people are going through hard times. You know, one of the things we're going to talk about today is how do you then, in your day, having a difficult time, as you mentioned earlier too, Doug, that how do then we still remain intact to be good, kind, do no harm, do right, staying intact? It's a trick. It can be very tricky because biology will rule, you know, an event will happen, but to stay in the point, I think, where, again, we direct, manage, control our own behavior versus those other things controlling us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very difficult to know how to interact in life when we come across things that are ill-behaved, ill-mannered. You know, it's very hard to know how do you interact with people when they are behaving badly? I just want to smile and say, have a nice day, and somebody's screaming at their kid. You know, I mean, it's, what do you do with that? You had a really wonderful story once, Doug, about driving down the road and somebody ahead of you appeared like they were drunk, and you almost called 911.
Yeah.
You know, share that story, because it really is appropriate how we can carefully choose our words to interact with people so that we can all help each other to grow up.
Well, the story is, this was just a few months ago, and Tracy and I are heading out one Saturday to the store somewhere, and we're following this small white car down one of the residential roads. It's a long, long road, and speed limit's like 40, 45. Anyway, they're weaving all over the lane. And I kept trying to look to see who was driving, and I couldn't quite tell. And we get a little bit down the road. They're going off the road. I mean, I really thought that, you know, whoever it was just drunk. That's how they were driving. So that's right. We were going to Walmart. And so they went across the intersection. They came up to the light, and I could see that it was what appeared to be a mother and a daughter. A young girl, you know, well, teenage girl. And so I didn't call, but I had my phone out. I had 911 dialed in, and I was about ready to call. And then I could see, you know, a little bit more what it was. Anyway, we followed them in to the parking lot, parked not too far away, and I went up, they got out, I went up to the mom, and I just, you know, very kindly says, man, we were following you, and I almost called 911. She says, well, why? I says, because, you know, she was, I said, student driver? And she said, yeah. And I says, she's all over the road. I says, you might want to try some back roads. And I told her where. She says, that's where I taught my son, and there's nobody around, and it's a much better place. So she said, okay, thanks, and that was the end of it. But, you know, it blew me away that that wasn't even a concern. I mean, I almost did. Anybody, I'm surprised nobody else did.
So that's a perfect example of somebody not being conscious, not being enlightened at all, and not serving their own situation. Whereas we, as, you know, participants in life, I mean, in a very good way, I might add, in my opinion, kind of just tapped her on the shoulder and said, there was almost a really big consequence to this. Oh, what did I do?
Mm-hmm.
But she'll be more awake to the future. And I think that's a good thing. So to me, it's about how we stimulate each other toward better behavior and how to, you know what I'm saying? We all got to get there together, we hope.
Go ahead.
Sorry, we're just not each an island, that's all. We interact. And it's very difficult to work on yourself, to know that you are giving yourself attention, that you're evolving, you're trying to be a better human being, when it seems like other people are not doing the same. They're not doing the work, but you are. There tends to be a greater distance or space between them and us. And there we can risk the whole point of, you know, the ego kicking in too. But, you know, because we're all together, so we have to keep our compassion and stay grounded in our humanity, I think. So no matter what we think our ideas of enlightenment are, we come back to the same thing. Who am I? How do I choose to behave? And how can I, as you say, Doug, leave the woodpile a little higher?
Mm-hmm. So. All right, we have a caller on the line. Hewlin, welcome back to the program.
Hi, good evening. A very interesting show tonight. And I've had a lot of bizarre experiences, and I've had to wrestle with something, and I feel that I did have to stand in my truth, and however it turns out in the long run, I'm only trying to have it be the best for mankind as opposed to anything personal for myself. And in this bizarre situation, I don't know why, but people seem to take advantage of me in many different ways, but I still put forth whatever I can to bless other people. In a senior independent apartment building where I used to live, there were a group of malicious women gossipers, and they set me up in a scheme to where I was arrested from my bed. And I've never been arrested for anything in my life. And I put into the arresting policewoman's hands information from one of these accusers, who actually was some kind of reverend, and forgave everyone immediately. Miracles started happening. I got a court-appointed attorney who happened to be a retired major general from the Army National Guard. The first thing he said to me is, "What the heck did they even arrest you for?" I said, "I think it's evil trying to throw me off my path, but it won't." On the day of the hearing, there was no hearing. The prosecutor came to my attorney, who then came to me, and he said that the prosecutor will drop the arrest and all charges if you will agree that restraining orders can be held against you by these two women. And I had to make a split-second decision. I knew I was totally innocent, but I knew that I also was arrested from my bed. And if they convince the judge of one little lie, I'm history. Let me out of here. So as time progressed, I ran all kinds of scenarios and actually discovered that one of these women, the reverend type, with the documents, the written information, evidently has perjured herself. And that has yet to be addressed. Now, I'm not seeking vengeance, but it is part of my truth, and I'm having people investigate me in other areas. And,
so how would you relate this all to our topic of enlightenment?
Well, that some people would say just put it in the past and it never happened or whatever after you forgive them or whatever. I'm looking as not being egotistical, but as a way shower to show that good things can happen. Someday I would love to see a book and a blockbuster movie made of this and an organization that will truly help people that need the help get money from it.
Well, I think what you've done, what I'm hearing is that you used your intuition, you used a good sensibility, and you didn't lose your cool, although, you know, it would be understandable if you did. But you chose to call upon all of your life experience in that moment and utilize it, and not to lose yourself, but to utilize what you have learned in your life. And that, I suppose, in a way, is a moment of, you know, greater consciousness, greater application toward enlightenment. And hopefully you're setting a good example. It sounds like you are. Setting a good example of good behavior for other people, no matter how they act.
Yes, that's very perceptive. That's exactly what I'm looking to do. But this is a whole paranormal situation, because now it has manifested in another weird way, where I came into contact with a spiritual type teacher over a radio show April last year. And we mirror each other unbelievably, and in conversations it was beautiful, except that over time she became more deceptive and elusive, and in her life she had 3 marriages, a couple internet affairs. When I'm first coming into contact with her, she was breaking up from an affair she had with
To make it more relevant in this moment, though, for this conversation. No offense.
I just want to say that she is a reverend, and she had the first name of the other woman that had me arrested, and she became threatening toward me. So I have her in check, but it's wild.
Well, thanks, Sheila, and I wish you the best on it.
Thank you.
Series of events, the synchronicities and things that cross over. It's an interesting, I think everybody has had, well, hopefully not arrested out of their bed, but everyone has had an experience that is, you say, oh my God, you know, why is this happening to me? What is this? And at very many levels, Doug, you know, we've had discussions about, part of it is what kind of energy do we have in ourselves that, you know, we're kind of connecting with other things. And the other stuff is, I just say crap happens. You know, stuff, it just does. I mean, we are in that kind of a world for the enlightened age that we're in, for this enormity of good things that we have. And I totally believe optimistically that we're an evolving species. There's also just crap happens.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of negative stuff out there, a lot of fearful people. And so it does happen, but you can't make it, allow it to define you. I think what I'm hearing from Hugh is, you know, he's got some stuff going on, but he is standing in what he believes in and seeing the good side of it too. And hopefully that will all change where he doesn't even have to have this kind of experience. That's what we hope enlightenment, evolvement, and consciousness does.
All right, let's steer the conversation back to what we had talked about a little bit at the beginning of the program about the ego and, you know, and its role in enlightenment. And there's quite a discussion going on in the chat room about that. And so, you know, there's basically a bit of a debate going on about how can you be self-responsible? How can you have self-acceptance if there is no self, if you have to lose the self? And for those who are involved in that, you know, you're all pretty much talking about the same thing, only different. We're talking in different shades, if you will. You are all talking in different shades. You know, of enlightenment and of the self and the ego. And the point is made by Gnosis in the chat room. You know, when you look in the mirror, you see the body, but not who you are. You see an interface made for you to traverse the physical world. Well, that's true. You know, there's much more to us, you know, than what we see in the mirror, obviously. And I will reiterate what I've taught, what I teach in the degree program. And what I said earlier, that your ego, and I'm talking about a healthy ego, who you are is part of it. You know, in my opinion, you can't become enlightened if you don't know who you are. So if you lose who you are, how will you become enlightened? You know, there's different shades, there's different ways, and there's different approaches to it. Some folks like sensory deprivation to reach an altered state. Some people use hypnosis. Some people use drugs. You know, there are different approaches to experiencing all that is. And so we don't want to let that get too, you know, too off track here, because we're essentially trying to figure out what it's all about anyway. I mean, this topic of enlightenment is just part of the overall question of what is consciousness, you know, what is it capable of, to what extents does it reach out to, you know, how does it influence existence? Is our existence solely from our consciousness? Well, that's an idealist view. Or is our chemical brains all there is? Well, that's a materialist view. Or do we have a spiritual aspect and a physical aspect? That's a dualist view. So these are some of the questions that we're trying to answer and get some, enlightenment about.
You know, I think this question of this self, I think in the last, let's say, number of decades, there's that be here now, lose the self, that is transcendence. I think that it's kind of influenced people to see outside the self again. So it's a double, it's one of those double-edged things, because all I know is myself. And when I, you know, look in the mirror, I see all of me. You know, it's okay that I can look at the parts, but I still come back to the whole, and it's me. So I think we have to be really careful about what self is when people say, well, consciousness is outside the self, inside the self. And sometimes we're all using the same words, as you said earlier, Doug, using certain words, but they are different shades of something. I get a little bit nervous when I hear people talk, again, in this new age kind of movement, that, you know, to seek the self, diminish the self, let go of the self. And there's a big one going on right now about never mind about the past. We live in the now. We don't think about the past. We don't look there. And I get confused, honestly, because I really don't know what they're talking about. In the whole, I think what I'm seeing is people taking out little slices of thought to make it a whole. So I look in the mirror and I see the whole deal.
Well, yeah, you're a psychic, so what do you expect?
No, yeah, well, look, you know, here's another interesting thing with age. You have to, I think we take for granted what we think we see. You know, whatever your face may be when you're 20, one day you walk by a mirror when you're 40, 50, 55 or more. And, whoa, what is that face? Who is that?
Yeah.
And there is a checkpoint of who am I? Whoa, because the body changed and when did I miss that? You know, it's like, okay. And it's like, I'm going to, wait a minute, I'm just going to feel the wall here in the mirror and look around. Is that really me? Okay, it is me.
Right.
So I think that there are always these checks and balances that we have to make. And I don't think we live in this really interesting world of vanity. And if we think we don't have vanity and it's not attached to ego, we're all mistaken. You know, if we get up in the morning and you're brushing your teeth, you're washing your face, you put on your makeup, in the case of, well, some men do too, you know, and you get on particular clothes, that is ego. And I don't care which way you want to slice it.
But it's also part of pride, you know, and caring, you know, caring for yourself properly and wanting
Absolutely.
To, you know, have a good appearance. And that's part of character. It's all part of enlightenment, too. You know, it's a healthy self-concept. You know, one of the things that, in lieu of what's some of the chat room chatter there, is that, you know, one of the things taught by MCHS Church is to value, not devalue, the person. You know, do no harm, do right, and that every person has worth and has value. And so one of the things that I talk about or talk against profusely is whatever concepts that are out there, do not buy into those that in one way or another teach the denigration of an individual person. You know, these ones that say, you know, you're just going to go back into the bigger ocean of consciousness when you die, to me that's denigrating the individual. I think that we are all unique. I think that we're all valuable. I think that we're all worthy. And I think that we all are a part and contribute to the greater whole. Each one of us. You can take a ship as an analogy. You have many positions on a ship. You have a captain. You have a first officer. You have deckhands. You have the engineer. Everybody plays their part. Everybody has a role. And the good thing about it is not everybody wants the same role. If everybody wanted to be a captain, then we'd have a problem, because who's going to fix the engines? If everybody wanted it to be an engineer, we're going to have a problem, because who's going to guide the ship, you know, steer the ship? We all play a role. We all play a part. And there's so much to the universe. It's vast. Consciousness is vast. There are many things to do. There are many ways to do them. And we all have our part in it. And, you know, that kind of touches on what we've talked about in past shows about finding your purpose and living your dream and living your purpose. And you know, really finding that fulfillment, a.k.a. enlightenment?
Well, there's a couple of little things here in the chat. Manisha's made another little comment. We are all part of this vast universe. We are a holographic image of the whole. Well, it kind of confuses me a bit, but one should try to look for the same characteristics in others as a whole and not someone else. So I get, but then she says, then actually I see myself within me and mingled with the self of others. So the concept of that notion is seeing us in a matter of energy, if I'm reading that right. Would you agree, Doug?
Well, yeah, I would, because, I mean, think about it. We are all affected by each other. I mean, if I really take a deep look at myself, who do I see? Well, I see Doug, of course, but I see influences by many people I've known. I see influences by my parents. I see influences by my mentor and mentors. I see influences by people that I know. I see influences by authors of books I've read. This is all part of it. It you know, we become a unique combination of thoughts and talents and qualities, traits, based on what we've taken into our mind. So I think that, and that's what Manisha's comment struck me, you know, I actually see self within me mingle with the self of others. I can buy that because I see a similar thing, but still I'm uniquely me. There is no one else on earth like me. Thank God. Just kidding. But that's true, you know, of all of us.
You know, Ron has just added something in chat here. We need to understand that our spirit or soul is currently in a physical body, in a physical reality. And I am so with him on that one. Totally am. There's these earth physical laws that we still abide with and alongside, and, you know, we interact and we're interdependent and we have a physical reality, and very often we have to be careful that we're not looking for things outside that physical sense, or there's no sense being here. I have this kind of philosophy that the whole point of being here in this reality, in this body, is to learn about it. So what is this body doing? What is this mind doing? What are these emotions doing? I'm here to learn about being human. If we can change our view a little bit, and it's not attaining a sense of spirituality, we already are. We just have to remember how to do it better in the human form. It's the human form that's so temporary. I think way more temporary than any amount of energy or sense of spirit that we can even, you know, grasp to imagine. So keeping that centered groundedness to realize that we are human beings in a body, I think it's really an important thing to stress. So I guess that's essentially what the school and you teach, Doug, is to stay grounded and to stay, you know, self-centered and not in an egotistical way.
Right, right.
And to be complete in that. And the physical reality is very much a part of
self-possessed.
That. Self-possessed. Absolutely.
You know, and I'm talking about these terms all in healthy ways. You know, when you say self-centered, that means to be centered within yourself, not focused too much on yourself. When I say self-possessed, I mean, who owns you? You know, does your boyfriend own you? Does your religion own you? Does your boss own you? Who owns you? You know, who's violating your boundaries? Well, whoever you allow to violate your boundaries is who owns you. And you might be owned by several people. When I say self-possessed, I mean you own yourself. You make your own decisions. Doesn't mean you can't seek outside counsel and advice. Fine, you take that in, but everything you need is within you. Every answer is within you. It may take a confidant to help draw that out of you, but it's still within you. That's what we teach in spiritual counseling and life coaching, is that you, as a coach or counselor, draw it out of the person. You pose questions that draw them out. But the answers are within, and the answers are up to them. It is up to each one of us to steer our own ship. You know, we are the captain of our ship.
Well, in fact, here's another question in the chat. Do mental illnesses interfere with the ability to achieve, some kind of enlightenment, such as bipolar and so on. Well, I think if we rearrange the thinking, you can help me out on this, Doug. If we rearrange those words, it's not about achieving enlightenment. It is to be open to continual growing that is constant enlightening. Does that make sense?
Yeah, what you're trying to say is, look, do you ever achieve enlightenment? Do we ever achieve that point where we can say, yep, I'm enlightened? Yes and no. You know, there you can get to a level of awareness about the world and yourself and others that allows you to accept personal responsibility, make your own decisions, you know, believe in yourself, you have high self-esteem, good self-concept, you're basically complete within yourself. Yeah, you know, you're by and large, you have achieved this state of enlightenment. But does it end? No, it never ends. And even it could be argued that when we die, it doesn't end, because who knows what's on the next on the other side in the next chapter? What lessons will be there? What opportunities for growth and enlightenment are there?
Self-responsibility being a huge part of that.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody is, and if I can just clarify, just really to focus in on this for 1 second, if somebody is has some kind of biochemical imbalance, are they managing to treat themselves for that? It would be no different than, are you eating the right food? Are you taking your vitamins? You know, and there may be some kind of other food source, albeit a pharmaceutical, who cares, that is necessary to be in that place of self-responsibility towards greater self-management. So to me, whatever way gets you there, that keeps you in balance, that keeps you together so you can keep growing and learning, go for it. That's why we live in the Western world. Here's the deal. We live in the 21st century. I love painkillers. I don't have to bite on a branch and anything like that. You know, while I'm in pain, I can take a pill. I like that. Sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked about a lot of stuff tonight on enlightenment, a lot of different aspects, you know. And to sum it all up, you know, enlightenment is it's a journey. It's not necessarily a destination. You know, when we become more aware of ourselves in a healthy way, aware of others, their plight, aware of the world, the environment, and so forth, when we can accept self-responsibility, when we have self-acceptance and respect for free will, when we are complete within ourselves and we don't, quote, need anybody else to sustain us or complete us, you know, we're well on our way. And another huge point is do not relinquish yourself, you know, to anything. You know, you are to be valued. You are worthy. You know, take pride in yourself. Value yourself. And don't adopt any beliefs that diminish or denigrate the individual. That is you. Now,
I just want to add one thing in here really quickly. You know, somebody offering somebody else methods of self-healing, this is the part where, you know, we have to be careful about unsolicited advice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are doing their best, and it's more in the exchange, not to point the finger. So I just want to throw that in there. It's been a great show, Doug. Boy, it went by fast.
Before we go, I'd like to just encourage everybody to take a quick second, send out a bolt of positive energy to people who are in need, to the universe, to the earth, to all of us, that we can continue as a race on our evolutionary path to, you know, greater enlightenment, to greater peace, to greater tolerance, to peace on the world.
And thank you to everybody for joining our show tonight. It's been a really great participation, and thanks for being here. And thanks again, Doug.
Yeah, thank you too, Vicki. Thanks to John Hightower, the man behind the curtain.
Yes.
Calls. Next week we'll have another topic for you. We'll post it on mchschurch.org. Please visit there. Read the Principles of Belief. If you identify with those, we'd love to have you as a member. If you're interested in learning more about metaphysical humanistic science, please visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. You can get more info there. If you'd like an email mini course, there's one also there at metaphysicsinstitute.org. 10 lessons in it. We're pretty much out of time, folks. Thanks again so much for your support. Please tell others about us, and have a great good night.